And welcome to another episode of Bakari Sales Podcast. I believe this one's going to be pretty fun as we go through this and talk about all the things that really matter. I have Jason Selvig with me and Devram Stiefler. Did I get that right?
You nailed it. You nailed it.
Oh, my goodness. You got to understand. Yeah. You call me Baraki, Bakari, everything. Sometimes when I'm on TV, everything but a child of God. So it's glad to be here with you all today. The good liars trying to figure out what's going on in the world around us. I start each one of my shows out by having people walk us through the arc of their careers. And so, Jason, I'll start with you, but walk us through your career and the arc of your career and walk us into the steps you've taken to get to the work that you're doing now.
Sure, sure. Well, I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and ended up moving to West Palm Beach, Florida when I was in high school. And I was kind of an angry kid when I moved to Florida. I got really into like punk and hardcore music and was kind of like a little bit of a brat kid, I think my parents would say. But I got into acting while I was down there. If I would have stayed in Louisville, it would have been basketball. I just would have been playing basketball. And I
That's
maybe
all you got to do in Kentucky anyways, like
coal. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So wouldn't have made a good coal miner, I have to say.
Yeah. Best case scenario, I would have been on the bench on a Division III team, maybe best case scenario. But I got into acting and then ended up going to Syracuse University for acting school. And it was there that I kind of got into politics a little bit. Like I was, I think, one credit short of having like a history minor, and I was taking poli-sci classes and things like that, and started doing. Moved to Los Angeles for a couple of years and then moved to here in New York and got involved in the sketch comedy scene here. And that's where I met Devram. And our story, you know, we have our own background between the two of us for the identity of the good liars. So I won't get into, I won't spoil that until I let Devram tell a little bit more about his backstory. But we came together and kind of realized that we both had the same kind of lack of shame, maybe, or something that allowed us to like do these public pranks and do things in public with real people. And we've been doing it, you know, for the last decade or so. So, Devram, I'll let you say yours, unless you have a follow up there, because there is the good liars.
That's where our stories join.
Yes, exactly.
You got to the point where we come together. I grew up in Grand Junction, Colorado, kind of an interesting, like small conservative place in Western Colorado that currently Lauren Boebert is the representative of. So if that gives you an idea of the kind of place it is.
It makes perfect sense that I can find from Devram to Lauren Boebert.
Yep. Boom. 0 degrees of separation there. Ended up going to Connecticut College and in my senior year there, did like a comedy film study project with one of my friends. We made some comedy shorts. Didn't think that much of it, but it was the most fun thing I felt like I had done in school. And moved to New York with that friend. And when we drove across the country to move to New York, we were listening to a CD of stand-up shows. And it was called Invite Them Up. It was this old show that used to take place in the East Village. So with no other reason to make a decision about where exactly to live, we were like, let's live as close to where that thing is happening as we can. So we got a place in the East Village, tiny, tiny place in New York, and just went to see a lot of comedy. And then eventually I auditioned for the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, and I got on a house team there and was performing there on a regular basis. And that kind of brings us up to where Jason and I were basketball buddies. We would play pickup in the city, and then eventually... Occupy Wall Street happened, and you know, two guys who'd been like into comedy and acting, we decided that there was like something to be done here. We were going to do a sketch. We were going to go down there, and our idea was we're going to dress as the 1%, as investment bankers, and we're going to go down there and we're going to protest the protests. We're going to say all this wild stuff, you know, like if you guys keep up all this protesting. You know, we're going to have to give up our third houses in the Hamptons, our season Yankees tickets, our cocaine habits are going to take a real hit. Like, we can't have that. And so we called it Occupy Wall Street.
How high were you as when you thought about doing this?
I think I was, not enough.
What is it?
It's like,
maybe when we thought about it, you're saying, but when we're there, it got very real, very fast. There were a lot of protesters, a lot of media.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Let's talk about comedy for a second as a vehicle for the work that you do at a time when a lot of politics just really isn't that funny. How do you find the humor in a really dark moment in American politics?
Well, I don't know if we're that successful at it sometimes, because sometimes it goes more into tragedy than comedy. I feel like it is a weird moment. And I would say it's even like 2020 was dark, obviously. It was a dark time, COVID, thousands of people dying every day. President, it seemed like he just didn't even like care that it was happening. And then you have this election on top of it. But right now, it feels like it's even like a darker time. But to find the comedy in it, like somehow there's like, we had some funny videos that we filmed like on January 6th in DC. Like there's these moments sometimes with the people, maybe it's the characters or the bits that we've had, that we've written for them. But we're able to find it. But also like it kind of swings back and forth between the comedy and the tragedy of it. I don't know, Devon, if you found the same.
There are definitely times where we're like, do we even want to go to this thing? Do we want to go to another rally right now? Nothing about it feels funny. And sometimes we'll hit the brakes for a second. Because it does, I don't know. It's definitely a fine line to ride. And if we're not feeling like it's funny, then it's not going to come across funny. So I think finding humor in this means having a dark sense of humor, and we both do. And that's where we're at. I mean, that's just where we're at.
I think all of our humor is becoming a little bit darker, but talk about your creative process and how do you find opportunities for content?
Well, it depends. You know, like a lot of people, you know, comedians will be like, oh, let's look at the news and let's try and react to that and write a joke about that. But we kind of like look the opposite way. We're like, what's going to be an event where somebody's going to make news and how can we get in there? And like sometimes even be part of the news of it.
Make the news ourselves. Yeah,
make the news ourselves. But sometimes like it's like, how do we react to that in real time and be at these places? So it is a different process. A lot of it's just like looking and seeing where these events are. You know, we found ourselves in a lot of like strange places, not just the Trump events, which, you know, honestly, we're just so tired of at this point. Like it's like even like, We were in North Carolina this last weekend. It was just like, yeah, we'd seen it all. We see it, like, she's like, you just see like the craziest outfit, the craziest shirts, Trump saying the most out there thing, and you're just like, you're numb to it at this point. You're like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm not even gonna.
Let me ask that, because that's what in the business that's what we call a segue. So that's my next question for you, which is like, you're in the field quite a bit with Trump voters. When you're talking to Trump voters, what are they telling you? And why don't you think losing or any of the noise around him or even convictions really take an effect on their support for him? I mean, just as you become numb to him and the things that they say, it seems like they are, I don't want to say numb, but they just really don't give a damn about the things that are going on around him.
I mean, I think he tapped into that aggrieved person at the very beginning. You know, you have you don't feel like you're as successful and as happy as you should be. I'm finally going to speak for you. You've got an ally here. I'm not a politician, so I'm going to say it, you know, shoot you straight. And I think those people feel like they found their guy and are not leaving. So they, I just don't think anybody's going anywhere. That whatever percentage of the country really still feels, despite everything that's going on, despite all the new information that keeps coming out, they made that decision a while ago and are sticking with it, surprisingly. Even these people here, it's like, most important thing to me is law and order, law and order. We need to have law and order in this country. Well, wasn't Trump just convicted of fraud? He owes like $400 million because he broke the law. Yeah, but I don't care about that. It's like, there's no new piece of information that's going to break them loose.
He's a God-fearing, moral man is the one that we hear a lot now. And I'm just like, you mean the guy with 5 kids by 3 baby mamas? That's the guy that we're talking about?
The guy who cheated on his pregnant wife with a porn star? Is that the same guy? Allegedly.
Too far, Jason. Okay.
Wow. First moment of tension today. I love it.
People have their vices. Okay. Have their vices. What did you learn about American politics from your comedy? I want to hear both of you all respond to that.
Sure. Well, it's interesting because we started doing this in 2011. Working together and then kind of like getting really into like the political, like the campaigns and things like that in 2015, 2016. And the first election that we were in Iowa, we were in New Hampshire, Florida, with Super Tuesday states, all that stuff, where we were doing a movie called Undecided. And it was so exciting because it really felt like there's all these candidates. It was a wide open field. We didn't know who was going to win, Democrats or Republicans. And it felt like a real process. And all of that excitement is now gone because now one man, a reality show host, narcissist, is in charge. It runs politics across the board because Democrats are not going to be voting for Joe Biden or whoever the candidate ends up being. If there's like an 11th hour change, they're not going to be voting for anybody. They're going to be voting against Donald Trump. And these people who are supporting Donald Trump, they're voting for him because they love him. So it's changed. My viewpoint has changed. I'm so sick of Donald Trump. I want America to move on in some way, not just for like the sake of democracy and all that stuff, but for as a comedian, I need something else right now. I can't say
that you guys make so much money and so much content off Donald Trump. I was looking at a stat the other day about the number of books that were sold by journalists under the Trump era was like 10 times, and the revenue was 10, 20 times more than that of, you know, under Joe Biden. It's just that people aren't reading Joe Biden books.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
It makes sense. It makes sense. But we are ready to move on. I will say
we are.
That.
Yes.
So if anyone out there is listening, Donald Trump, if you listen to this show, just leave for Jason and I. But you were asking what we learned about politics. The thing that always comes to mind for me, when we were out shooting in 2016, we were going to all these rallies. We were doing these pranks with these presidential candidates. And it was this overwhelming feeling that slowly kind of set in that, like, there's no adult in the room. No one has this figured out. There's no plan, not just in us interacting with these people. And oh, the security at these campaigns is kind of doesn't have their shit together. More in the fact that, like, oh, everyone's just like shooting in the dark and hoping to come out on top. No one knew how to deal with Donald Trump. Much smarter people than Donald Trump were trying to figure out how to beat this guy and couldn't do it. There's no adult in the room. There's no plan. It just unfolds in the path of least resistance, it almost feels like. So that brings us to like this election. We have these two guys, like this awful rematch that nobody wants to see. I think because no one actually has any answers. There's no adult in the room who's got everything planned out. And that to me was like a real rug pull moment. We'll just see what happens.
That's terrible, but so true. Switching gears to Democrats, I noticed that a lot of your content is with Republicans or conservatives. My question is that intentional or do they just make the best content? And what do you see when you're talking to Democratic leaning voters?
Well, I think we had a switch, I think, after Trump won, where we've done the pranks. And since 2016, even before, we've done pranks with like Republicans and Democrats, presidential candidates, like that hasn't stopped us either way. Like we've had interactions with Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren and Andrew Yang and in the 2020 election. But talking to Democratic voters, I think everybody is really scared about this election. And I think people are wondering, like, everyone has the same fear about Donald Trump. And then also, I don't see anybody who is super excited about the ticket that the Democrats are putting out there right now. And I think people are scared. And I kind of share some of the fears about this election. It's like, the stakes are so high. We know what happened last time when Trump lost, the violence that took place. If he wins, I think there's going to be, it's going to fundamentally change how the United States is. And maybe it already has changed, and I'm just naive that there's no going back, that the genie's out of the bottle at this point. But I think a lot of Democrats are a little uneasy about what's going to happen in 2024.
I'm glad to have you guys on the show, because I made a suggestion the other day on CNN that Democrats have to stop pearl clutching, and the White House needs to embrace the president's age and even do skits and commercials from senior homes where he talks about all of his accomplishments and then gets up on a walker with the little tennis balls on the bottom. Goes like 4 o'clock. I mean, if you're the Biden campaign, how would you advise them on how to talk about the president's age in a way that acknowledges the obvious, but also lightens the mood a bit around his fitness to serve for another 4 years? And I know you guys have thought about this. I know I'm not the comedic genius of the three of them. Ephraim, I'll let you start it, and I'll go to Jason.
Oh, man, that's a tough question. I don't think people know how to do it, hence you giving suggestions about how to do it. I don't think people know.
Thank you for that. Because... You're not a fucking genius, Picard. People don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we had the answers. Yours might be better than any of mine. I'm like, yes, they can't continue to act like it's not a thing. But if it is overly acknowledged, it just weakens his position. So Democrats, I think, are forced into this weird world where they have to pretend it's not an issue. When it clearly is. So I think that, you know, the options are to, like, find another candidate and at the convention nominate this other candidate. There are ways to not have it be Joe Biden. But if it is Joe Biden, I kind of think people have to say that he is good at the job of president, and that people have to vouch for his ability to run things, talk about the economy, talk about things that this, the soft landing after COVID that people said was not going to happen, that somehow the economy has remained strong. Like, there's a lot to campaign on. I just don't know if he's delivering his own message well. So I think people have to just tout his achievements and yeah, I don't know, but put him in some nursing homes, I guess. So he's the youngest guy in the room. You might be right on that. Like there might be something to it. I got to mull that one over, but you might have struck gold there.
Thank you. I'll take credit for it. Just put me down as like a co-writer.
Sure.
Associate producer is going to be your title. That's just like the one that you give to somebody.
You have to pay them people. You have to pay it. Okay, I'll take that. You
know, All right.
Me and Kane.
This is good. It's productive, guys.
Yeah.
For both of you guys, who are your comedic influences?
It's funny. I was just, I guess it was the end of last year. I grew up and I loved The State on MTV. Obviously, I watched SNL and all that stuff, but The State, and then like Stella came out of that, and Wet Hot American Summer, that whole like crew of people, Reno 911. It was just like a comedic influence of mine. It's just like ridiculous, stupid humor, which is funny because it's like not at all what we're doing right now, but it's definitely my taste. You know, I love the like, the stupider the better as far as humor goes. So that those guys have definitely been my comedic influence. And we ended up seeing them. They finally did a live show together after like 25 years. And we saw them last year here in New York.
Yeah, that was fun. I was at UCB Theater, and I think it's what Jason's describing with The State and everything. It was like dumb and funny and ridiculous and silly, and I loved being in that world. So people like that definitely influences. But as Jason and I started getting really into what we did, Sacha Baron Cohen and like Michael Moore and these people who had interacted with real people managed to make serious things ridiculously funny. I know we still like think about like what would those guys do in certain situations. So still being influenced by those great people.
I can see that. You guys, Jason gives off a little Jim Carrey, and Davram, you give off a little Chris Farley.
All right.
I mean, you guys are really, really, I didn't say all that. You don't want that fucking good, but no, I'm just.
Oh,
well,
we know.
You said it.
Oh,
we
said
know. It.
Don't worry.
You to that.
Don't worry.
Better make the cut. No, of the
you guys
podcast,
are really, 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 really good at what you do. I mean, you give us, I mean, we give you all so much material, but you're really good at what you do. One of my last questions for you before I let you go and change the world through laughter. Talk about your tour, The Good Liars Fix America. What's the format for your shows and how can people see you live? And do they have to be sober?
Oh, we recommend that don't be sober, and don't be sober watching you on CNN either. Like don't watch any of the news sober. I don't know how you do it.
It's too stressful of a time in the world to be sober.
Who says we're sober on the news? I mean, let's
say. Oh, okay. All right. And now we're breaking some news here. So, our live show is called the Good Liars Fix America. And we picked five issues that are dividing the country. And we realized that these issues are dividing all of us. And we've been filming for, you know, a decade. And all this filming that we've done is actually research on all these issues, both sides of the issues. And we can use the research to solve America's big, big problems. And then we also have a podcast that's coming out called The Good Liars Tell the Truth, that we're going to tell behind-the-scenes stories and interview guests on. That'll be out by the time this is out. So we've got a lot of stuff going on. Hopefully, we've got some West Coast dates coming up for the Good Liars Fix America. And
yeah,
maybe
we'll
down
post
in
all that
DC.
Stuff on our website. If you go to goodliars.com, we'll have the podcast and future show dates and all that. But we're very excited about the podcast. Where we're going to kind of be able to use some of our experiences on the road. Like Jason said, it's been 10 years of doing this kind of thing. We have all of this stuff we want to talk about, tell behind the scenes stories, guests from, you know, comedy and politics. We're really excited to break that out on March 5th.
I'm excited. When you guys need like a special guest, let me know. I mean, I'll pay for my own trip out there. I'll come and hang out with you guys on stage for a little bit. I would love to do that. How can people find you both on social media and follow you on social media? And is there anything that you all can tell us about anything outside of the tour that you all individually or collectively may have coming up? Any movies or anything you could talk about without getting in trouble?
Without getting in trouble. Oh, that's an important little addition there. Well, we both did a movie earlier that came out last year that was out in the theaters that a couple of our good friends made called Blow Up My Life, which is a narrative feature that these two really talented directors, Abby Horton and Ryan Dickey, they're a husband and wife team. They put it together and they shot the movie for like $50,000 and it looks like a couple million dollar feature. And they shot it during COVID and it was a really wild experience. So you can check that out. I think it's streaming. You can buy it anywhere now, like Apple and Amazon and all that stuff. It's a very, very fun experience for both of us.
As 2024 progresses, we're pitching some stuff. So we hope that we can show rather than tell in a few months. But
yes,
a variety of projects that we really want to make something big and cool out of this election year, whatever the actual result of the election is. It's like a historic time. A lot of
well,
funny,
whatever
sad
happens,
stuff.
Whatever happens with the election, we know Donald Trump will say that he won. We don't have to worry about that. He will say he won no matter what. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, thank you both for joining the Bakari Sellers podcast, The Good Liars. Check them out if you want just a little bit of comedy, but also comedy mixed with some brilliance. These two are brilliant at the work that they do. And thank you, Davram. And thank you, Jason, for joining us today.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
So much for having us.